And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Tom Fornelli joins me today. It's been a while since Tom's been on the podcast, but his return comes in the perfect time for the return of the Friday Five. Tom ranks five things, be they dumb, important, or related to college football. And what we're talking about today are the fan bases that he ticked off this year writing for CBS Sports. It's a fun look at the ups and downs for five fan bases, and always good to catch up with Tom. Make sure that you subscribe to the SEC on CBS podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher. Dennis Dodd, another Doddcast coming up soon, plus all the latest, and you get it first as a subscriber. So, enjoy Tom Fornelli and the five teams that hated him the most this season. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Chip Patterson with you. Tom Fornelli joining me. Hello, Tom.
Hey, it's been a while.
I know, it's been a while. It's good to have you back. It is great to pair up this podcast with your Friday Five, which is also returning now. Every single week, every single Friday, you'll be collecting and ranking, or ranking and ranking.
You know, there's really no rules.
But there is at least the collecting of five things explained by Tom every single Friday.
Yes. Sometimes they're just typical stuff, and then sometimes they're all incredibly stupid. I prefer the stupid ones.
The stupid ones are great, but you do give good analysis in there from time to time. Well, it's all great analysis.
I mean, when you write as much crap as I do, every once in a while, you're going to write something insightful.
So you return with some fire. You return with your five angriest fan bases. And so I thought this would be fun that we could go through each of these teams' season to at least give them some either credit or context for what might have caused such anger and volatility from the fan base. Now, was this mostly on mostly on Twitter?
I would say most of the anger is on Twitter, but you know, there are the occasional Facebook messages and emails. But Twitter, I think Twitter is just the easiest way to get at somebody and let them know how stupid you think they are.
Well, I think the easiest way to reach Tom, and this is the way that I do. So listeners, if you want to reach Tom Fornelli, especially with complaints, you contact his media relations coordinator, Robbie Calland. He's at R Calland on Twitter, and he can handle all of the requests too. If you've got any radio requests or complaints, remember, send them to Robbie Calland.
And he will also go get you lunch.
All right, we begin in the midst of scandal, in the midst of controversy down in Waco. You did not catch a lot of love from the Bears fans this year for Baylor.
But like I wrote in the Friday Five, most people didn't this year in the media when it comes to Baylor fans because, well, we all know what happened at Baylor with Art Briles and the consistently seeming like every other week there's a new story coming out surrounding the Baylor and the sexual assaults and all the Title IX violations. It just gets grimier and grimier, but Baylor fans were pretty much just mad at you because, you know, you were actually talking about it. And then for some reason you were offended by it or appalled by it or disgusted by it. And you shared these thoughts and Baylor fans were like, what the hell? Not all of them. I mean, there is a certain section of Baylor fans I dealt with regularly that were in agreement with just about everybody else. But as we know, there's always going to be that contingent of every fan base where feel like they're being victimized because you're saying bad things about the school they've chosen to root for or they went to. And instead of thinking about the actual victims in the story, or the, if you want to go alleged victims for legal reasons, but instead of thinking about their well-being, they're placing themselves as the victim because you fired their coach and he was actually winning games and it's not all his fault and blah, 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 and yada, yada, yada. It's like, yeah, okay. I don't think Art Briles did any of the, you know, the sexual assaulting, but it is his program. He did somewhat compared, you know, if looking at a few of the documents that have come out of court filings, he did turn a bit of a blind eye, Chip.
I think,
and
yeah,
he paid
the
price for it.
I'm not surprised here. I think that the number one thing that I've observed in, you know, just especially this last little stretch, is that whenever the scandal hits, the fans of that team, and I'm speaking exclusively about college sports, especially college football and men's basketball, the fans of that team go into this bunker mentality where you're either with us or against us. And on the same side, I do think also there is a little bit of conflict when you have to spend those hours reviewing the details of some really grimy and egregious stuff. It's going to have some influence on how you view that team or school. So, like, both of those things are happening for sure. I mean, there were times where, especially because of the way the season was going, it was easier for me to reconcile in my head the bottom is falling out at Baylor, and the bottom is falling out is because, like, no, actually, the football program is being dismantled right now.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I jumped
to that conclusion faster, probably having to get so deep in the details of the actual scandal.
Yeah. And we've talked about on the podcast earlier during the season, you know, I don't root against anybody, but I wasn't exactly sad to see Baylor losing football games this year, especially with the assistant coaches all wearing the, you know, the CAB shirts and everything during the season.
Sure.
When they went on that 6-game losing streak or whatever at the end of the year, I wasn't exactly shedding any tears for it.
Sure.
It's not that I'm rooting against the kids on the team, not that I'm rooting against the fans. It's just with the whole situation, I feel like Baylor having a great season probably would have slowed down any progress being made as far as cleaning up what's happened there and moving on. So the fact that Baylor was losing games, I actually thought probably for the long haul, and not football success, but just for the program itself, having a mediocre season was definitely what Baylor needed.
Mm. Onto a much happier note, and happier because this story starts with
this is your fault.
Your boy really starting to light things on fire. It was just a mere brush fire. I guess that's not really that funny, but it was just a small little issue in West Virginia where we were supposed to pick the best football program in each state. And again, Robbie Cowland, who is Tom's media relations person, sent all complaints
and lunch go-getter,
sent everything to him at R. Cowland. Robbie and I put Marshall ahead of West Virginia. And then Tom, West Virginia had a really good season.
Yeah. And so West Virginia fans were just generally already on the defensive.
With CBS specifically.
Yeah, with CBS Sports.
And this is all my fault.
You and Robbie. And like, I didn't agree with your choice of Marshall, though I thought it was a defendable position. West Virginia fans obviously felt very different about that. But then it happened. The season starts, and West Virginia is off to like it's won its first three games. Now it's 4-0. Now it's 5-0. Now it's 6-0. But the whole time, I mean, I was writing in Fernelli 50. We were talking about it on the podcast. We were never really big believers.
Yeah,
in West Virginia. They hadn't really proven anything to us. And I had written, even when they were 5-0, I said, listen, it's a good team, but this is also the kind of team I'm looking at. If it finishes 7-5 at this point, you know, like loses 5 of its last 7 games, I'm not going to be all that surprised. And when I wrote that, the combination of what you and Robbie did, they then turned to me and it became the whole CBS Sports hates West Virginia. And I was getting so much crap for it. And really, I didn't say anything that was like out of bounds. I just said, it wouldn't surprise me if this team loses 4 or 5 games down the stretch. I didn't say they were going to. I just said, if it happens, it's not going to be a shock. And I was wrong. They only lost 3 games down the stretch. But I thought my overall point was proven was that the first 2 losses were against the 2 good teams in the Big 12, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. And we saw that Oklahoma game Saturday night in Morgantown on primetime. They got embarrassed.
I've got this weird thing with all of the old Big East teams, like Louisville, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, Syracuse. Like I always for some reason I look at them, I'm like, yeah, they're pretty good. And I've got this weird bias where I think there were too many Friday night Big East games, like too many Cincinnati, West Virginia double overtime games on Friday nights. Where
you've
now,
got that post-traumatic Big East disorder.
Like, yeah. And I just, for some reason, I always think that there's some level that they just can't get over in going up against, like, since making the move from the Big East. It's a bias. It really is. Like, when Louisville was on the run, I was like, eh, we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for me, my problem with West Virginia this year was just I didn't think its offense was good enough to where it was going to be able to win the Big 12 because while a great defense, I think, you know, always helps you in the Big 12, you have to still be able to score points. And that was my problem with West Virginia, and that's the opinion that I voiced. And as we saw, you know, the three best teams that played this year, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Miami, lost all three of them. And so at the end, this was a good team that took advantage of a schedule that provided it plenty of breaks, which is good. It had a great season because of it. It ended up at, you know, 10-3. That's an awesome season compared to the expectations. It's just after that 5-0 start, I wasn't going to say West Virginia is a Big 12 title contender and a playoff contender, which West Virginia fans took personally for some reason.
No. All right. Well, listen, they were getting tricked. The polls were tricking them because the AP poll voters and the coaches poll voters were sliding them up there. Remember?
Yeah. And also, yeah, and that part of it too is my Fernelli 50 was still kind of down on them. Mm. Like, you know, they would be ranked like maybe 12th. In the AP, but in my Fernelli 50, they were still in the 20s.
Well, here's where I got it doubly wrong. You may have gotten the West Virginia side of this, but remember it was West Virginia over Marshall, and while West Virginia is going on this run, Marshall went 3-9.
Yeah, exactly.
They tied for last in Conference USA East, that rigorous Conference USA East. Marshall over West Virginia.
Conference USA, from top to bottom, probably the toughest conference in college football.
What is your hate with the middies?
This all comes from my Fernelli 50 rankings. It was, you know, Navy was really good at the beginning of the season. It started off record-wise. It was starting off 9-2, and it had picked up wins over, you know, Houston, Notre Dame, Tulsa. And despite all of this, you know, my formula, which it's a mathematical formula. If you're not familiar with it, my opinion plays no role. But what it weighs heavier than anything else is wins and losses. Yet here was Navy sitting at 9-2, which the entire time was ranked generally in the low 30s to high 40s, even after that start, behind teams it had beaten like Houston and Tulsa. And this made Navy fans very mad. They were letting me know how stupid my formula was, and I was trying to explain to them the problem is Navy's offense was abysmal. You know, it's as you'd expect to happen with a service academy that doesn't really get.
No, wait. You said defense. Like, you meant defense.
Yeah, their defense was abysmal.
No, their offense was incredible.
Their offense was fine.
Yeah,
but that's just the case with service academies is when because they don't get to recruit 5-star defensive linemen to Navy. So when they're playing other Power 5 teams or, you know, AAC teams, they're not going to be a shutdown defense, and they weren't. In just about every major statistical category used in the formula, they were bottom 10 nationally, and it was killing their ranking.
Well, the schools in the American, they'll still get some sick wide receivers that mm-hmm. fly below the radar, and with the right combination of coaching and a little bit of personnel, like I always think that the skill position talent in that league is always pretty good. Obviously not at Navy as much because of the offense, but like Tulsa's always got a bunch of dudes. Houston's going to continue to do that even after Tom Herman's gone. Like even Cincinnati under Tubbs was kind of had some guys that were you know borderline track stars out there. And so Navy's secondary doesn't stand a chance.
No. And if you know they were having to outscore people, and with their offense, which was so brutally efficient, they were able to do it. But as we saw at the end of the year, when Navy lost its final three games, and injuries played a role in that, in offense, they lost their second string quarterback, who had been their starting, so they were down to their third stringer. It's just you saw in the AAC title game, Temple ran all over them. Army, the defense was not able to stop Army when it had to. Then it went to the bowl game against Louisiana Tech, and it gave up, I think, 45, 48 points against Louisiana Tech in that bowl game.
Shout out Michael White.
Couldn't stop anybody. And like I wrote, you know, at the end of the year, Navy at 9-2 was probably ranked, I think, 41st. They finished the year at 9-5, ranked 48th. So it's like I feel like the formula was pretty much the one that was right on Navy the entire time and knew exactly about where it should be because that's exactly where it ended up, and it had a record more accurately reflecting its place by the end of the season. But yeah, so Navy fans on Twitter, You know, I don't know if you know this, but guys in the Navy can use some salty language.
Really?
Yeah. And they were, I mean, there was some good anger. I mean, you know, like every fan base, I feel like, has a characteristic. And the Navy is, they use some foul words, man. Just hurts your feelings.
Before we move on in our countdown of the teams, fans that hate Tom the most right now after a wild 2016, we got to tell you about today's sponsor. That, of course, is Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They have an opportunity to set you up for just $10 per person per meal. You can get gourmet meals, easy instructions. Right now, what we've got coming, cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, all sorts of new opportunities to try stuff out. So, so good. And here's what you can get. You can get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels, it tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't you wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC, Blue Apron, a better way to cook. The Clemson Tigers were a group that was in the full underdog role last year and kind of took a new position this year, obviously on its way to winning a national championship. The Clemson Tiger fans, they picked their enemies and they rode them hard. Did you do okay?
No, I got a lot of it. And it was, I have to say, though, Clemson fans are probably the most polite about it, at least with the ones I dealt with this year. There weren't any, like, personal attacks. There was a lot of passive aggression coming out of there.
All right.
But it wasn't, like, mean. They were just like, you're wrong.
How very Southern.
Yeah, they were very, very. It was a charming way of calling you an idiot.
Yeah, charming yet degrading. Yeah,
yeah.
Hey, like, you know, buddy, I know it. I know it real well.
They want you to know that they think you're stupid, but they're not going to come out and say you're just stupid. They're going to be, you know, polite about it. They're going to say your intelligence is questionable. But this, much like Navy, a lot of it stems from the Fornelli 50 rankings, which the formula was down on Clemson just about all year. It was a team that was in the top 10 and, like, at towards the end of the year, top 5. But all season long, as Clemson's winning game after game after game, they're still behind Alabama every week. They're still behind Ohio State every week. They're still behind Michigan, Washington, and even Louisville for most of the season until Louisville kind of fell apart at the end. Clemson was ranked behind them in the formula. And as obviously, when you compare it to the AP polls and the coaches' polls and the college football rankings that they started releasing late in the year, when you're comparing my poll to those polls, Clemson fans are kind of looking at you like, well, what the hell is this? And it's honestly, the only explanation I had for it in the formula was just the fact that Clemson wasn't blowing anybody out. We talked about it all year.
And
they
were winning
games, but they were playing a lot of close games against teams that they probably should have just been destroying. And Deshaun Watson, although, I mean, we're all going to remember how Deshaun Watson finished the season in the, you know, between the ACC title game, the semifinal, and the title game. But for most of the year, Deshaun Watson was having, you know, he was still really good, but compared to what we were expecting from him and what we've seen from him before, he was having a pretty mediocre season for
the most part. Okay. There is one area where the Deshaun Watson midseason criticism really rings true, because otherwise, statistically, it was almost the same season. It was just compared, like, there were just different sets of expectations. When he did it before, we had never seen him do it like that. And then in his second season, when he ended up winning the national championship, it was just a higher bar that he wasn't able to meet. Like, statistically, over the course of the year, he ended up about the same, except in one area, and that's red zone interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so damning. Like, I totally get it. If your criticism of Watson of this past season is he threw some back-breaking red zone interceptions and even end zone interceptions, and that is totally fair. You know, they played 15 games, and there were about 5 of them where he threw bad picks.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like the red zone aspect. It was who he was throwing them against. It was like in their bigger games, you know, the Florida State games, the Louisville games. That's when a lot of those turnovers were coming. So even though they were somehow able to pull the game out at the end, thanks in part to Deshaun Watson, they were also put in bad positions because of Deshaun Watson, where they should have been blowing those teams out. So, and so you combine where I had them with the rankings, then you combine it with the fact that at the end of the year, after Clemson beat, you know, won the national title, my rankings still had them second behind Alabama, because apparently beating Alabama on the final play of the game wasn't enough to convince the math that Clemson had had a better overall season than Alabama. So my formula still kept Alabama at number one. And then you throw on the fact that I voted for Lamar Jackson for Heisman and not Deshaun Watson. And that's, you put those three things together in a pot, you stir it up, and you get some polite anger.
Some polite anger from upstate South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, and number one, another orange-tinged team, the Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee's season, though they won the Life Championship, and though they did finally beat Florida, it is otherwise a little bit of a disappointing season. The window, in my opinion, for big-time success at Tennessee, based on the cycles and the players and the personnel, I think that window has closed right now. I think that Tennessee was the favorite going in last year, and they lost in some pretty painful ways. Now, they had injuries, but, Tom, it was a year of frustration and anger from Knoxville, just sort of overwatching this fall apart. And
yeah,
it is not surprising that your commentary of Tennessee. Tennessee had two chances, really. I remember this very specifically. There were two games where Tennessee had an opportunity to seize control in the SEC East. Remember, because the team in first place kept losing?
Yeah.
And they had two chances.
At the end of the year, somehow they might actually still end up winning the division.
Yeah, and they were getting healthy at the right time. This was going to be it, and then they lost again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I mean, the frustration from Tennessee fans, it evolved over the season, because at first they were angry at me because early, you know, before the season started, Tennessee was going to be good. This was going to be the year, but I wasn't really buying in. So they were angry at me for saying that I don't think they're as good as you think they're going to be. And then they started off really well. So it was, ha ha, you're stupid. We told you you were wrong the entire time. And then things started falling apart. So the frustration morphed into they were angry over being, you know, thinking that they were finally there, only to have the rug pulled out from underneath them. So then they started coming at me with that kind of anger. But it all started with, before the season, you know, the coaches poll comes out and Tennessee was ranked number 10. And the Friday Five I wrote that week was the five teams that I thought were the most overrated in the preseason coaches poll, and Tennessee was at number one. And like I wrote in the post, it said, Tennessee's got a lot of talent. Tennessee could win the SEC East this year. And if Tennessee does win the SEC East, I won't be shocked. It was just that based on everything we'd actually have seen from Tennessee on a football field to that point, there's no reason in the world any of us should be ranking them at number 10 until they actually prove it. And that's what started it, because I wasn't buying in. I wanted them to prove it on the field, whereas Tennessee fans had already bought, you know, their SEC title game tickets, I guess, at that point. They were mad at me for not going along with the narrative. But like you said, they started off well. Things went to crap. And they finished the year ranked number 24 in the coaches poll, 14 spots below where they had started the season. So
Tennessee is addicted to, like, tied for second place in the division. It can't go too far from being tied for second in the SEC East. If it does, it gets uncomfortable. Like, if it moves too far down, they'll pull it together and go on a rally so they can move back up into tied for second. And if they get in first place, they'll get uncomfortable and they'll make sure they take a loss so they can get back tied to second. They can't. I mean, they're like a homebody for that spot in the standings.
And I would say the one thing that the fans proved to me this year was, you know, we've talked about, you know, they've been – They're notorious. You know, we talk about Knowles Twitter. We talk about Miami Twitter. We talk about, you know, just certain schools where their Twitter fan bases get very angry and they're all united. They're like one collective hive mind, and they will come at you like a group of wasps stinging you until you die.
It's like they
Tennessee proved to me this year they're a top five fan base when it comes to that. Because they were not nice. They were angry. There was the one guy that was threatening to get me fired somehow. He told me there was some other Tennessee fan.
See what the joke's on him, because they don't know. They don't know how much you're needed around these parts.
No, but I thought it was
jokes on them.
I thought he was joking. Like, are you serious? He goes, it's like, don't laugh. We've done it before. I was like, who the hell's career have you ended? You dude with 12 followers on Twitter, please. I'm trembling over here.
He might be taking credit for his comment on the post of somebody who is already on their way to being fired.
Well, he hasn't been successful getting Butch Jones fired yet either.
Ooh.
So. But it's just, yeah, they were I say this where they get angry with me. I'm not complaining. I really don't mind. Honestly, most of the time it's amusing. There's only a couple people that you're kind of like, dude, what the hell? But most of the time I have fun with it. And I have to say, although they hated me, I really, really enjoyed Tennessee fans this year because they were so easy to get going. Once they were already mad at me, I'm not going to pretend I didn't enjoy poking them a little bit every once in a while.
It's tough. It's life is tough for the Tennessee fan right now. And I see it. I see the examples of it sort of in every conference across the way, where there was it, but it continues to be further and further away. And so the desire to get back on top, boy, it stings. And it only gets worse with time.
It's got to be strange, because when you think of the BCS era, you know, the SEC completely dominated the
Absolutely.
Era, obviously. And Tennessee was the first school to win a BCS title. And so to see the SEC can carry on from there and completely dominate the landscape, while Tennessee during that time just kind of plateaued a bit and then started to fall, it's got to be pretty frustrating.
Yeah. No, I mean, you think about, that being able to reach that ceiling means you still have to play Alabama
every year.
And how's Alabama? Well, unless Alabama continues to get banned from high schools.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any. I don't think any more coaches will be banning Alabama from their high schools after what happened to our boy in, I think it's, what's the city called? It's just outside Shreveport. It's like a Shreveport suburb. The high school is Bossier. Maybe it's Bossier City. Yeah.
What was the thing that set this off? Because we already had the week of headlines from the New Orleans metro area high school coaches and their relationship with Ed Orgeron, which was smoothed over with a little bit of shuffling on the staff. What was going on for Alabama?
Well, the story is Parkway High School coach David Feaster. He was on the radio earlier last week or this week, and he basically said that any school is welcome on his campus to recruit his players except for Alabama, because he said it's a long story behind it, and quote, it involved them not being ethical in recruiting. The bone he had to pick was Brandon Harris, who just recently announced his transfer from LSU, was Feaster's quarterback at Parkway High School, and at the time Alabama was recruiting him. And, you know, other schools were also obviously recruiting him. He was a highly rated recruit at the time. But Alabama wasn't – like, their offer wasn't really an offer. They were offering him to get him to come to Alabama on a visit, which is basically their way. Alabama was trying to get numerous quarterbacks on campus at the same time to basically have them compete with one another. So that way Alabama could decide this is the one we actually want to make the committable offer to. Well, Feaster, I guess, didn't like it, and then – later,
I don't see any problem with it, Tom.
I don't.
We're going to bring him to campus. And we're going to let him compete.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it. If you're in the position to do it,
do it. Yeah, I'm not
like,
stopping you.
I understand where Feaster's coming from. It's like, you know, he's just trying to protect his players. He wants to make sure they're not, you know, because recruiting. And I'm not talking about violations and that stuff. It's just, recruiting can be a very shady business. Where
absolutely
scholarship offers aren't really always scholarship offers. that just because the school hands you a scholarship offer, you could say right then, be like, all right, I'm coming. They'll be like, whoa. we're not taking you yet. There's this other guy we're looking at first. He's ahead of you. But
and sometimes the kid's like, hey, you know what? That's cool. I'll be on the waiting list. It'll be all right.
It's just like anybody else. Sometimes schools accept you right away. Sometimes some schools put you on a waiting list.
I know people who held out from their enrollment just because they were on a waiting list somewhere and they wanted to give it a little extra shot. Absolutely. I remember that being an option for me during that process.
Yeah. It happens.
But it is always interesting when it's like a top 100 recruit and you're like, oh, wow, you could be like suiting up for Florida tomorrow, but you're going to wait? All right. Mm-hmm. All right, man. Go for it. Roll Tide.
So anyway, Feaster comes out and he says this, and, you know, it gets some attention. And now today the word comes that Feaster's been fired by Parkway for coming out and saying that, you know, he won't let Alabama on his campus.
Yes. So don't come out speaking. You can protest your local officials all you want, but if you speak out against Nick
don't
Saban.
Go on the radio if you've got a thing against Alabama.
Yeah.
You know who's got to be pissed, though?
Who?
If I'm Ed Orgeron, I'm pissed off.
Oh, because you were going to be able to capitalize on this Louisiana high school that didn't have Alabama creeping around.
Yeah, because Parkway's got another couple of guys on their team this year that I think are top 100 recruits. I think they've got one 5-star, one 4-star.
Cam Robinson came from Louisiana. Yeah. Tim Williams came from Louisiana. Like, there have been some superstars that have come from Louisiana.
If you're Orgeron, the more coaches in Louisiana there are that won't let Alabama recruit their players, at least not on campus, you've got to be down with that. So, but yeah, it's the perfect February story, in my opinion, in that it's something that really came from nothing and then was turned into a much bigger deal than it was.
And then someone lost their job. Somebody lost their job because of it.
Yeah. It seems like an overreaction on everybody's part. It seems like an overreaction on Feaster's part just because of the way they recruited Brandon Harris. And now it seems like an overreaction on the school's part to fire him. I mean, it's not like he was committing a crime. He was just saying, I don't want Alabama on my campus recruiting my players. If my players want to visit Alabama, if Alabama wants to have an official visit to their house, that's fine. He just didn't want Alabama coaches on school watching practice. He wasn't trying to help Alabama get his players. And that's all he was really saying. And
Roll Tide.
He's lost his job. Roll Tide. Nick Saban put in the call.
And, Roll Tide.
He got another one.
Roll damn Tide.
Roll damn Tide.
Tom, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is good to get back rolling again. We will continue to do this more. And make sure that you continue to check out the Friday Five coming, surprise, every Friday on CBS Sports.
Allegedly.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thank you.